The Victory Garden, written by Rhys Bowen and read by Saskia Marleveld.
Chapter 1. The Larches, near Shippey, Torquay, Devonshire. May 14th, 1918. To Miss Clarissa Hamilton, Field Hospital 17, British Forces, France. My dear Clarissa, thank you very much for your long letter. I am in awe of the matter-of-fact way you recount such dangers and horrors. Who would have thought that you, who shrieked at seeing a mouse in our dormitory, would have turned out to be so fearless? And you have every right to scold me. I know I promised to write to you regularly, and I have failed miserably in that task. It is not that I am lazy, nor have I forgotten you, you can be sure of that. You are never out of my thoughts and prayers. It's just that I find my own life here in the countryside so sadly lacking compared to the excitement and danger that you face daily. In truth, I have nothing to write about, and I'm ashamed to admit it. While you were there amongst the trenches in France, tending to the wounded, being shelled by the enemy, here I am, safe and secure in my English country village, doing nothing more for the war effort than taking some of Mummy's scones and rock cakes to the wounded soldiers in the convalescent home, and trying to convince myself that the presence of a young lady will cheer them up. The rhythmic clickety-clack of a lawnmower made Emily Bryce cease her writing and glance out of her window. Old Josh was pushing the mower over a lawn that already appeared to be immaculate. Her gaze swept the full length of the garden to the rhododendrons and azalea bushes, now in full springtime bloom, surrounding the bottom of the lawn with brilliant pinks and oranges. The apple trees in the kitchen garden were also white with blossom. Her parents seemed to take it for granted that their grounds would look perfect, not appreciating how lucky they were to have a gardener who was well beyond the age to be called up to fight. Their smooth and comfortable life had not changed one bit, apart from... She sighed and turned her attention back to the letter. How I wish that I were with you, in spite of the awful conditions and danger that you write about. I even think I could face a few rats and bad rations to escape from the tedium of my daily life. My parents still keep a tight rein on me, and in spite of my constant entreaties, will not let me do anything more useful than those convalescent home visits, well chaperoned by my mother. Remember that song about only a bird in a gilded cage? That is me. As you well remember, Mummy had made it her sole purpose in life to make a good match for me, preferably with a title. If there had been no horrid war, she would have moved mountains to have had me presented at court. Now there are no balls, no hunts. In truth, no eligible young men to be found any longer. She's become bitter and resigned. She wants me out of her sight, and yet will not let me escape. I realize that this desire to keep me cocooned has something to do with Freddie's death. They have taken it awfully hard. He was father's pride and joy, you know. A first at Oxford, and destined to become a barrister, and then a judge like father. Yet he survived for less than a week at the front in Ypres. She paused again, staring out across the garden, breathing in the scent of newly mown grass, mingled with the bonfire Josh had started behind the sweet peas. Safe, familiar scents. Sense of home. How stupid is it that we are raised to keep our feelings to ourselves, she thought. How ridiculous that I can't even tell my best friend the truth, that Freddie's death has shattered our family. She remembered her father as quite jovial before the war, and her mother, while a born snob, had occasionally shown a softer side. Now it was as if they had both locked themselves away, her father silent and remote, prone to outbursts of anger, and her mother critical of everything. Sometimes she could sense them looking at her, and she was sure they were wishing it was she who had died, and not Freddie. Oh, Freddie, she thought,